Okay, we're going to begin here at the two dots on the top of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. Gemara is continuing to discuss the Braita that we just saw, which is a Shochatan B'chutz Patur. The Braita said that if you do Shitat Chutz, whether it was a case where the Mum preceded the Hekdesh, or the Hekdesh preceded the Mum, in both instances, the Braita seemed to indicate that it was a Shochatan B'chutz is Patur. Now, our Mishnah told us in the case where the Hekdesh preceded the Mum, that a Shochatan B'chutz is Chayav. Mara says, Rav Huna matni chayav. Rav Huna that a shochatan b'chutz is chayav. Umukimla, and he sets up the case, bidokin shiba'ayin. Talking about where there's a problem with the eye, it's one of the mums, either it's a cataract or it's a withered spot on the eye. That's one possibility. Rashi does bring a second possibility. First one is dokin is tula, like we just described. The second possibility that he brought down was that it's actually in the upper eyelid, that there's a cut or a mum on the upper eyelid. That would be the problem here with Dokin Shiba'ayin. Valibo de Rabbi Akiva, and this is according to Rabbi Akiva, Damar im alu lo yerdu. They end up on the Mizbech, they don't come down. So let us just remember that when it comes to Shkutei Chutz, the only thing that is problematic with Shkutei Chutz is something that would be Ra'ui Bifnim. So any animal that has a mum in it is not Ra'ui Bifnim. So by definition here, no matter whether it's the mum before the Hekdesh, or the Hekdesh and then the mum, once you have a mum, it's not Ra'ui Bifnim. So therefore it makes sense that a Shochatan B'chutz is Patur. If you do Shkutei Chutz, you're Patur in these cases because the mum ruins it from being ra'ui bifnim. The one exception to that rule, and this we mentioned it when we spoke about the Mishnah, and here it's from the Gemara, which is that Rabbi Akiva believes that with a small mum, like dokin shiba'ayin, which is kasher be'ofot, it's not something that is posel by a bird. It's a light type of mum, it's not something that's obvious that you would see right away. Rabbi Akiva says that type of mum, since it's a lighter form, it doesn't apply be'ofot, it doesn't apply by the other animals that go on the mizbeach, therefore, it's not considered to be a full-fledged mum. Now, it's enough of a mum that you can't put it on the mizbeach, that if you come to us and say, can I use this behemah, we're going to say no. But it's not enough of a mum that if it does end up on the mizbeach, for instance, it was shechted and by accident it ended up on the mizbeach, but will not force you to take it off the mizbeach. Im alu, lo yerdu. That's not true of other mumim. Other mumim, which are obvious mumim, if they go up on the mizbeach and they're not supposed to be there, we take them off. Because of that, it's called, quote-unquote, Ra'ui Bifnim. And since it's Ra'ui Bifnim, according to Rikiv in this case, therefore, if you're Shochatan B'chutz, you're going to be Chayav. So that's the instance or the issue that we're talking about here is a case where it's a mum that came after it was Nikdash, a mum that is a Dokin Shiba'ayin, a mum that would be poselet from going on the Mizbeach, Lichat Chila, but Bidyevet, since if it did end up on the Mizbeach, it wouldn't take it down, therefore you're going to be Chayav, Bishkutei Chutz. And that's what Rav Huna was Matnei, Chayav. Right, now next is Ben Lifnei Pidjono, Ben Achar Pidjono Useh Tumuras. This is also in the Braita that we saw. Said we were going to discuss it today, which is before it was redeemed or after it was redeemed, it can create a Tumura. Now this is talking about a case where Hekdesh, then it got a Mum. So when Hekdesh got a Mum, if you redeem it, it's what's called Psulei HaMukdashim. Once it gets the Mum in it before you've redeemed it, I understand why it can create Tumura. Because it's still full-fledged kedusha, it has kedusha to goof. It's the chui min hamizbeach, but it still has kedusha to goof and enough that you have to redeem the animal. On the other hand, once you've redeemed the animal, why should it create tmura? You've taken off the kedusha, it's now psulei hamukdashim. Why does it create tmura? So that's what the Gemara is going to discuss here. Amar of Nachman, Amar of Ravua, utmurato la'achar pidjono meita. The tmura that is created, the exchange for this animal that you tried to create after it was redeemed, dies. Normally, the tmura has the same din as the source of the kedusha. Again, there are exceptions to that. We have limudim in certain places where we say the tmura doesn't do that. But, in general, when you are try to exchange an animal and say, I want to make this the olah instead of this, both of them become kadosh. Same thing with the shlamim. And they both end up on the mizbeach. Over here, the person is oset mura with the item after it was psulei hamukdashim, after it's redeemed, it dies. My time. Heichel yavid, the similar to Rav Huna on yesterday's daf, which is, what can you do? The karvei, put on the mizbeach, mikoach kudusha duchiya ka'atyo, can't put on the mizbeach because it's a source, it's a derivative of something that's coming from something that kadosh that was already knocked off away from the mizbeach. Got a mum, it was redeemed, it doesn't have full-fledged kedusha in it, it's something that won't go on the mizbeach, and therefore the source, which is something that is subpar kedusha, so the derivative certainly is subpar and won't end up on the mizbeach. Lifrika. So what do you want to do? Redeem it. Exchange it for money and then use that to buy something to put on Mizbeach. Lo alima lemitpis pityona. It doesn't have a strong enough kiddusha on it in order that you can redeem it. Redemption requires a certain minimum threshold of kiddusha because you have to be able to transfer that kiddusha onto the money. This doesn't meet that minimum threshold of kiddusha. Hilkach meita. Therefore, over here, it would die. It's machlokas, just a bit machloket amaraim about whether it can be ola lemizbeach or that it has to be ledamim. Lifnei pidyonam, mifle plige behu. Ikalaman damar koche li karev, ikalaman damar koche li riyah. That was with the children, that's with vladot. I assume the same thing would apply by the tumura over here. Now, it can't be redeemed when it's tamim. It needs a mum to be redeemed there. Everybody agrees with that. You need a mum because it's strong enough kedusha that it's not niftei tamimim. Now, Tosfot disagrees with what I just said and says that the case of Vlad is different than the case of Tmura. That even though there's a machloket that we saw yesterday's daf with regards to a Vlad, with regards to Tmura, everybody will agree that that kedusha is enough to put it on the Mizbeach. With regards to a Vlad, it's a derivative of the mother. On the other hand, when it comes to a Tmura, the Tmura derives from the original kedusha of the animal, not from the current status of the animal. And therefore, Tmura will have a different outcome than that of a Vlad. Why don't we just wait for this tmura to get a mum in it, and then the balim will eat it? How is this different than what happens by b'chor maser? B'chor maser, we know, if they're tamim, they end up on mizbeach. If they balim mumim, the b'chor is eaten to the balim, who are the kohanim. The maser is eaten to the balim, who are actually the owners of this maser. And they don't have to be taken up to shlan, not taken up to the mizbeach. It's tmura. If you exchange your b'chor maser onto another animal, the same din applies. If it gets a mum in it, the balim would eat it. The kohen or the balim would eat this b'chor or maser. So why don't we say the same thing here? This psule mugdashim, if you are saying tmura, if you make it into a tmura, and then what? You're going to wait for it to get a mum, and then it should be treated just like the original, the source of kedusha, that it's edible, it's able to be eaten by the balim. The tnan, tmurat b'chor maser, hein, they, vivladan, uvlad vladan, their offspring, their grandchildren, atzov kol olam, arayen ke b'chor v'maser. They have the same din as the origin of the source, the b'chor v'maser, v'yuchlu b'mumman l'balim. As soon as they get a mum in them, they can be eaten by the balim. So amar le abaye, zeh shem imo olav, v'zeh shem imo olav. Both of them have their mother's dusha, or name, on them. Zeh shem imo olav, kulo tumurat b'chor v'maser. Mikre. So this one, meaning the Bechor Maser, they have their mother's name on it, and therefore they're called a Bechor Maser. Ma Bechor Maser b'mumam mit achlan, the balim, just like by the source, Bechor Maser, if they get a mum, they're eaten to the balim. Aft muratan, so too, the one that was exchanged, mit achla, will be eaten also b'mumam. V'zeh shemi moldav. In our case also, the shemi mo is on this tmurat. Tmurat kodashim ikriyai. So it's called the exchange for kodashim. Ma kodashim lo mitachle ele bipidyon. So just like kodashim cannot be eaten until they're redeemed. Ach tmuratan nami lo mitachle ele bipidyon. Here too, the tmurat will not be able to be eaten except if it was exchanged, if it was purchased, redeemed. We've already stated before that this doesn't have enough kedushah in it. It hasn't met that minimum threshold of kedushah in order to be redeemed. So what we're saying is that, yes, the tumura is identical to the source. So here in the case of Bechor Maser, the source is something that if it got a mum, would be eaten. So don't do over here, the derivative, if it gets a mum in it, you can eat it. The balim can eat it. And then by regular kodashim, the source requires two things. It requires a mum and p'diyah. And redemption in order to be eaten by the balim. So here the derivative will require the same thing. It'll require pidyon and a mum. So fine, the mum we can take care of, but the pidyon you can't take care of because you can't do pidyon on this animal because it doesn't meet that minimum threshold of kedusha in order to have pidyon work on it. And therefore, that is not a solution to the problem. And tmurat achar pidyono is meta. Tanya kavate de Rav Nachman. We have a braita that supports this position of Rav Nachman. That tmurato the achar pidyonah is meta. Behind the tmurat psulei muktashim shemeta. It's exactly the way Rav Nachman says. How do we know that's true? Tamadomar mi ma'alei hagera tamehu lachem. So the Gemara says that we learned out of the pasuk in Parshat Shmini says ach etzel lo tuchlu mi ma'alei hagera umafrisei aparsa. These you may not eat from those that chew their cud and have split hooves. So it sounds like these are animals that are otherwise kosher. They're malei geira, mafrisei pasa. Then it goes off the list, animals that only have one of the two. It says that the gamal, ki malei geira hu, prasenu mafris. But then the pasuk ends, tamehu lachem. So the Gemara is assuming that the tamehu lachem also modifies the first half of the pasuk. The first pasuk of the pasuk says, achad ze lo tochlu, mi malei geira, umafrisei aparsa. There's certain animals who are chewing their cud and have split hooves, yet you're not allowed to eat them. What's that? That's the case here. Tmurat psulei magdashim. That's what the Gemara says. It's a perfectly kosher animal, but you won't be able to eat it. Where it says, Ami bayle do chamesh chataot metot. I need that to teach me about the five chataot that are metot, that die. But the chatat, there are rules, and we'll get to them a little further on in Kodoshim. For our purposes here, Tmurat Chatat, somebody who tries to exchange a Chatat into another animal, Tmurat Chatat is Meta. It's locked up in a kippah and it dies. It's one of the Chataot that die, Vlad Chatat. There are others that also, in terms of Chatat, Chatusha Metu Baaleha, all of these are examples of Chataot that would die. Not true of other Karbanot by Chatat, this is the case. These five Chataot, how do I know they die? Because here, it's a perfectly kosher animal, yet it's Tamehu Lechem. So I learned that out of the pasuk, "Mimalei geira tamei ulachem." Where it says, "How will mafrisei parsa tamei?" Nafka. We'll learn that out of the other part of the pasuk. We have "Malei geira" and "Mafrisei parsa." So one of them will teach us our din over here, which is "Tmurat psulei mukdashim," and the other pasuk will teach us about the "Chamesh chataot meito." Tani nami hochi. We have a bright that suggests the same. Minayin the "Chamesh chataot meito." How do we know that the five chataot that they are put to death or they're let to die? These animals, again, things like Chatat shemetu ba'aleha, chatat shekipru ba'aleha, tmurat chatat, flad chatat. All of these are examples of these chamesh chatot metot. Tamad omer, mafrisei parsa tamet. Use the mafrisei parsa, not the malei geira. Gemara says, wait a minute, let's take a step back here. Chamesh chatot metot, hilchata gemira lo. That's halacha l'moshe misinai. The fact that these five chatot metot is not something we learn out of the pasuk. It's halacha l'moshe misinai. Elekiyata cross, then what's the pasuk for? Lit murat asham. For Tmurat Hashem, there we have a principle, again we'll get to it later on in Kodashim, which is anything by the Chatat, which is Meta, by the Hashem, is Roeh. Goes out to graze and get a mum in it, and then the monies are used to purchase a Korban. So the Hashem has the identical din to the Chatat, just by the Chatat it's Meta, by the Hashem, it's Olah the Riyah, goes out to graze. So where it says, Tmurat Hashem, Nami Hilchatahi. That's also part of the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. The Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai is Chamesh Chatot Meitot. And then the second half of the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai is Kol Shemeita B'Chatat B'Sham Roeh. That's the second half of that Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. So why do I need a pasuk for El Olam Chamesh Chatot Meitot? We're going back to the original assumption that we need a pasuk for Chamesh Chatot Meitot. V'Yitzrichra V'Yitzrich Hilkuta. I need both the pasuk and I need the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. D'Imikra, if I just had the pasuk, Hava Mina L'Ri'iyah. I would have thought, okay, this is telling me that certain chataot do not go on the mizbeach. That's a mehu lachem. But I wouldn't know what to do with them. I would only know that either they have to go out the riyah or they have to die. But I don't know which one. So kamash v'lon hilchata al mito. The halacha l'moshe m'sinai tells me that they are put to death. V'im hilchata, had I just had the halacha l'moshe m'sinai, avamina hechid da'avad ikrei. V'achal mehani chamesh chataot isura ika lav leko. So I would say that what happens in a case with one of these chamesh chatot, the avad ikrei v'achal, he went ahead after the chatat was rejected from the mizbeach for whatever one of the five reasons, and then grazed and got a mum in it, and he redeemed it, and then he wants to eat the animal. So I would have thought isura ika that there's a restriction against doing that. It's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. If you violate it, you're in violation of the halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Lav leka, but there is no lotasei. Kamash Valan, the pasuk tells us that it's called Tamehu Lachem. And when it's Tamehu Lachem, then there's a lav in consuming it, the Ika lav, that not only is there an Isur, but there's also a lav. An Isur means that you're in violation of the law of Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, but the law of Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, unless specified, does not have a punishment associated with it. A lav will have Malkot that is associated with it. Sivir Ba'itema, the other possibility is Lakushe. No, true, we don't need it for the Chamesh Chatot itself. But once we do the chamesh chatot, we can use that for the hekesh to the other half of the pasuk, which is davar haba mimalei ageira, the davar haba mimafrisei parsa, malahalan b'mita afkan b'mita. So let us say this: one of them, the mafrisei parsa, teaches us about the chamesh chatot. The malei ageira teaches us about tumrat psulei hamukdashim achar pidyonam. But we don't know what to do with this tmurat psulei hamukdashim achar pidyonam. What's their din? Is it the ri'iyah? Is it the mita? So that's the hekesh to mafrisei parsa. The chamesh chataot are meto. That's halacha l'moshe misinai. We connect it to the pasuk to teach us that just like the chamesh chataot are meto, so too the tmurat psulei hamukdashim achar pidyonam is meto. And so we use that for the hekesh in the din, not to teach us anything new about chamesh chataot meitot, just to tell us whatever else is in this pasuk will also have the same din as the chamesh chataot. That's another possibility of why we need it to be mentioned in the pasuk, not just in the halacha of the Moshe Mitzrayim. Alright, so now we go to the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah is a little bit confusing, but I have a little diagram here, and hopefully we'll make some sense out of it. Hamekabel, Tzona Barzel. Now Tzona Barzel, take a throwback to Ketubot. There are two different types of nechasim you can have. You can have what's called nechasim tzona barzel, or you can have nechasim milog. The difference between them is, what is the responsibility of the party that has them at this point in time? You accept something from somebody else. You accept it, and you're going to do some sort of transaction with it. If you accept it based on the valuation at the time that you receive it, and your obligation is to return exactly that amount of money. For instance here, you're getting an animal. They're giving you an animal to raise this animal, and because you're raising the animal, you will receive the offspring of this animal. You will share the offspring of the animal with the owner of the animal. So that's here. A person takes it. It's owner Brazil. When you received that animal, what was the transaction? Was the transaction that you received an animal that's worth 100, and when we are completed with our transaction, you're going to have to return me 100. I don't care what the animal looks like. I don't care what the animal is or what it's worth. You have to return me 100. That's called Tzona Barzel. The time that you hand it over, then we assess the value of it, and you're responsible and accountable for that value to return it. The other possibility is what's called Nifsei Malog. Nifsei Malog, in that case, you'll receive the animal. You're going to work with the animal. As long as you return the animal, doesn't matter what the change in value is. The increase in value or the decrease in value accrues to the original owner. In the case of the Tzona Barzel, the increase or decrease in value accrues to the recipient. That's what we're talking about here. Hamikabel Tzona Barzel min Ovid Kochavim. And a non-Jew gave him an animal to take care of. Now, when he received the animal, they assessed the value of that animal, and he'll have to return that full value at the end of their business partnership. In the interim, they will share in all the offspring of this animal. They will split the offspring of this animal. Vlado Tehem, children born to this animal, Pterim. They are patur from the bechora. Vladei vladotehem. On the other hand, their grandchildren are chayavim. Now obviously when we're talking about here, vladim and vladotehem, we're really talking about the next generation afterwards, which is that the vladei vladot of the Tzona Barzel that the Jew keeps, if they have children, then they will be chayavin in bechora. The new child that's born to them is chayavin dvara. So the Tzona Barzel is owned by the goy. That's the first generation. That for sure has no din in Bechora. Its children also have no din in Bechora, meaning that not only can they not be Bechorim, but their children will also not be. The third generation will also not be Bechorim, because these are jointly owned by, we'll see in a second in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to ask you a question, but they are jointly owned by the Jew and the Goy. We'll see why. The Gemara will discuss that. So this generation also will not be Bechorim, but if the third generation has a fourth generation, that fourth generation will be Chayavim in Bechora.
Who's the father here under that?
The Bechora is determined by Peter Rechem, so that's, it's irrelevant who the father is. So here we have five generations we're going to see in the Gemara, but the first generation is the Tzona Barzel itself. Of course, that's not Chayav and Bechora. The second generation, which you can only ask, why are they Pturim? The Gemara will address in a second, because you split them. Half of them go to the Jew, half of them go to the Goy. So I understand why the Goys are Patur from Bechora, but why is the Jews now Patur from Bechora? So then the third generation is Pturim in a Bechora also in terms of their being born, but their children, the fourth generation, will be Chayavin and Bechora. That the Gemara will explain. Hemid Vladotehem Tachat Imotehem. If, after they are finished with that first generation, they now take the next generation, they replace the mother with the children. Again, the Gemara will explain exactly what that situation is, or that circumstance is. Then, Vladei Vladot Turim. Then the third generation now becomes Patur, meaning that the fourth generation will not have a Bechora in it. But Vladei Vladot, the fourth generation, if it gives birth to a fifth generation, that fifth generation will be Chayav in Bechora. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Afilu Et Asara Dorot, even until 10 generations, and again, Asarat Dorot means forever, then Pturim. They would be Patur, Shachrayutan, the Ovid Kochavim, because they are responsible, they are collateral to the Ovid Kochavim, and this will shed light on the previous part of the Mishnah, which is, remember that he accepted it as Tzon and Barzel. Tzon and Barzel means that he has to return that money fully. Whatever the assessment was on the day that he received it, he has to return it. Now, the goy needs collateral for his loan. What is collateral for the loan? Obviously, the actual behemoth that he got is collateral. But not only is the actual behemoth collateral, the children that are born are also collateral to the goy. And the fact that he has a yad b'emtsa, the fact that he has any connection to the next generation, makes you patur mibichora. Since he has a quasi-ownership in the second generation, because they are also collateral to the original Tzon of Barzel, therefore, they are also pturim in Bechora. Question is, how far does his hand reach? How far does he get when we say that the items or those that are born are considered collateral? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in this case says it goes on forever. Until he reaches his money back, anything a derivative of this Tzon of Barzel will be collateral to the original Behemah. Whereas the Tanna Kamma believes that there is only two generations that are considered the one generation that's collateral, so the generation after that will be patur mibechora. So the third generation has no shaykhut to the collateral or to the original Tzon of Barzel. So that'd be the difference in their opinion, but that helps us to understand what the tour is over here. Now, Gemara says, Rachel, we've seen this before a number of times, two or three times already in the Masechta. Rachel shiyaldah min eiz, a ewe that gives birth to a goat, the eiz and a goat shiyaldah min Rachel gives birth to a ewe. There is no din in Bechora, because that's what we call a Nidmeh. On the other hand, if it's somewhat similar to its mother, then it is Chayav in Bechora. Now Gemara says, Lememra, the cave in Delo Nokot Mara Zuzei, Shuta de Mara Kaimel. Because he didn't receive his money, the animal is still in his possession. Our Mishnah seems to indicate that the guy who gave this animal a Tzon of Barzel, he basically gave you a loan of money, and now you have to return the money. But you have yet to return the money. In whose possession does this animal sit until he gets his money back? From our mission, it sounds like it sits in the goy's possession. It's collateral to the loan, and it's the goy's until you pay the money to keep this animal. So, v'riminu, is that really true? Ein mikablim tzonum barzel mivnei Yisrael. You're not allowed to do this transaction with a Jew. Because it looks like interest. Alma, the conclusion for that would be Bershuta de Mikabel Kaima, that the animal is actually in the possession of the recipient. So let's think about this. If you, two Jews, Reuven and Shimon, get together, Reuven owns the animal, Shimon agrees to take this animal and raise it for its offspring. Now generally that should be fine, there shouldn't be any issue with that. But as far as their partnership, their transaction, Reuven says to Shimon, I want this to be Tzon of Barzel. That means that when you receive this animal, we're going to assess the value, and you're going to have to return me that value. So basically what it becomes is a loan of money. He's a loan of money because he's saying to you, listen, it's worth 100 the day I gave it to you, and you're going to have to return me 100 at the end. I don't care what happens to this animal. You're going to have to return me 100. So he basically just lent him 100. Then they're splitting the offspring. So now for the offspring that Shimon keeps, that's fine, because they're for himself. But the offspring that he gives back to Reuven are basically, effectively, interest on the loan. And that's why it's not permitted to do such a transaction with the two Jews. Now, if again he didn't make it Tzon of Barzel, had he not said that you have to return me the absolute value, but he just handed him the animal, you have to return me the animal, then there's no problem, because then it's not a loan, it's not a fixed loan, because you are at risk. The lender is at risk for the value of the animal that was given over. When you're at risk, that's a partnership, not a loan. But once you make it Tzon of Barzel, it becomes a loan. So what do we see from this? We see that in whose possession does the animal sit? According to the din, the brayta that we just brought down, that we're talking about a case where it's two Jews, and that's equated to interest. That's like a problem of ribit. That means that the animal sits in the hands of the recipient, in Shimon's hands. Because if it was still in Reuven's hands, there wouldn't be any problem of interest. Because it would be a business partnership, and the partnership would produce offspring, and that's fine. The problem is that we assume that the animal totally goes to the recipient, and the outstanding obligation is a loan. Whereas in our case over here, by the goy, it seems like that's not the case. Because we're saying that the animal still belongs to the goy. Even though you've handed it over to the recipient, the Jew who's the recipient over here, it sounds like you're patur min habechora because the goy still has a hand in the animal. Well, why does he have a hand on the animal? We just said when you have Tzon of Barzel, it becomes a loan, and the animal itself goes to the recipient. So over here, the Jew's the recipient, it should be his animal, and whatever's outstanding, they have to return to the goy is a loan. So it's fine, he's paying interest on the loan to the goy, that's fine. But it should be alone and not considered that he owns the original animal. So we seem to have a stira between our Mishnah here, which says that the animal seems to still have residual rights, or it still residually belongs to the giver of the animal, the one who produces the animal, provides the animal here. Whereas in the case that we brought down from Baba Mitzia, it sounds like the animal is in the hands of the recipient, and therefore it's a problem of a loan that has interest on it. So Amar Abaye, Abaye says, no problem, no kasha. Had the kabel alei unza vizula, had the lo kabel alei unza vizula. The difference is what the provider of the animal said. He said, whether he said, I accept any onus or decrease in value. Did he take risk in the animal that he gave? So, in the case of our mission over here, the provider of the animal accepted the risk in the value decreasing, or anything that went wrong with this animal, he accepts that risk. So since he accepted that risk, you're still partners in the animal. Hadaloka, Bill, the case in Baba Mitzia is that he didn't accept the risk in the animal, therefore it becomes like a loan, and he doesn't have any part in the animal. So Amar Le Rava, the Kabbalah Unza Bezula Tzona Barzel Karile? How can you call that Tzona Barzel? So Rava asks your question, but that's no longer Tzona Barzel. The whole idea of Tzona Barzel is that there is no risk to the provider of the animal. That's why it's called Tzona Barzel. So that's Rava's challenge to Abaye. First of all, how could you make such a statement? Because that's not called Tzona Barzel anymore. How can you call our Mishnah a case of Tzona Barzel when you're the provider is accepting risk? Number one, vote my Pascha. Number two question is, that's not a definitive statement. You're just saying the word Tzona Barzel. The Mishnah says Tzona Barzel. Now you're coming to define it? You're trying to qualify what Tzona Barzel is in the Mishnah? The Mishnah should have said that. Because that's pretty important to know what type of Tzona Barzel we're talking about over here. Because it makes a big difference. This question, I think in general, is not as strong a question only because Gemara does that all the time. It qualifies the statements of the Mishnah. The next question, which is really a derivative of this, is Va'od Adatani Seifa, then in the latter half of the Mishnah, Aval Mikablim, Tzona Barzel Min Ovid Kochavim, but we say in the Mishnah that is found in Baba Mitzia, instead of saying in the Seifa, if you're Mikabal Tzona Barzel Min Ovid Kochavim, it's okay. Liflog Velit Nevi Dido, you could have both cases be with Jews. Bamed Damari Mamurim, when is it problematic to accept the Tzona Barzel from a Jew? Dolo Kabbalay Unsa Bezula, if he didn't accept responsibility for decreasing in value and anything that went wrong with the animal, because then it's a loan. Aval Kabbalay Unsa Bezula, if the provider accepted responsibility, Shapir Dami, then it wouldn't have been a problem at all. So you could have narrowed or made finer the distinction here, even with a Jew. Why does the Mishnah in Baba Mitzia, when it goes to the Seifa, say, by Novi Kochavim, it's not a problem. You could even make a narrower distinction within Jews. Elo Amar Rava, Rava explains the Stira, Idi V'idi Delo Kabbalay Unz Vizula. The case here of Tzona Barzel, it's Tzona Barzel like always. There is no acceptance of responsibility by the provider. So what's the reason over here? V'hochi Gaba Bechora Hainu Taima. Here's the reason by the Bechoran. This is what we discussed in the Mishnah. I led on to this based on the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But here's the reasoning of the Mishnah. In Ochanami, it always belongs to the recipient. The animal belongs to the recipient, both in the case of Baba Mitzia, and that's why it's a problem of repeat, as well as in our case over here. It also belongs to the recipient. If it belongs to the recipient over here, it should be Chayav in Bechorah, because a Jew now owns this animal. But here, the reason is, the Ilo Ate Ovi Chochavim by Zuzeh, if the guy comes down and says, I want to collect on my loan, the Tzona Barzel assessment, I want to collect on it, and he doesn't have money or doesn't give him money, he takes this animal is basically collateral to the loan. Since it's collateral to the loan, the guy still has a quasi-ownership in the animal. If he doesn't find the animal, the original animal there to take his collateral, Tafis Vladotida, he'll take the offspring of it. And that's why there's a Yadu Kovim Bemsa, not only in the first generation, but even in the second generation. So that means children that are born to that second generation, the third generation, are still Pterim Bibchorah, because the Goy has ownership in the first generation and in the second generation, because these items he will use as collateral for the original loan. Since he has a yad in these, anything born to these, the first generation, obviously the second generation, and the second generation, the third generation born to them, will all be terim for Bechorah. Only starting in the third generation, where the goy no longer takes those as collateral, does the fourth generation become chayav in Bechorah. Now Tosavot explains over here why the lien of the Nachri is strong enough to create yad Nachri be'emtza. We have other cases in Shas where the lien of the Nachri is not sufficient. For instance, the Gemara in Pesachim with regards to Anona. So Tosafot says over here, you have to look at what the original status was. In all those other cases, the Jew owns the animal, and now we're imposing a lien on top of that. So the default, or what we will think, is that it belongs to the Jew, and there's a lien on it. Over here, the animal belongs to the goy, and he's retaining the ownership because of the lien. And therefore, his ownership is more pervasive and more influential over here, because it's his animal, and he really doesn't relinquish his rights in the animal because of the lien. So since it starts out as his animal, that gives us more reason to say that the Yad Nachri B'Emtza has impact over here. So the original case, we have a stira between Baba Metzia and here, about who really owns the animal that is received as Tzona Barzel. Whose ownership is it? In the Gemara in Baba Metzia, it sounds like it belongs to the recipient, and that's why there's a problem of a loan here, it's a problem of ribit. In our Mishnah, it sounds like the goy still owns it. He's the provider, because otherwise you wouldn't be patur min ha-bechora. The fact that you're patur min ha-bechora says that the goy still has ownership here. So I have a steer. One place it sounds like the provider has the ownership, and the other place it sounds like the recipient has the ownership. Vaya gave one answer. He basically said that our Mishnah is not a case of Tzona Barzel. That's basically Abaye's answer. Rav Abba says that can't be the answer. Our Mishnah says Tzona Barzel. So Rav Abba says the distinction is always belongs to the recipient. There's no question. It's always the recipient's animal, and that's why in Baba Metzia it's a problem of ribit. Over here, why are you patur min ha-bechora? It does belong to the recipient. That means it's a Jew's animal. The answer is that the goy uses these animals as collateral for the original loan. Since they are collateral to the original loan, he has a quasi-ownership in the animals. His quasi-ownership makes you patur min ha-bechora. Because over here, Yad Goy B'Emtza, any form of ownership of the Goy is enough to eliminate the Inyan of Bechora. As long as the Goy has some connection to this animal, that's enough to eliminate the Din of Bechora. Baba Metzia is a Din of Ribit. But the owner he has no risk in there. The owner has no risk. The fact that he has these animals as collateral doesn't change the fact that he has no risk in the loan. He has no risk in the loan, and he's receiving back from you the offspring. So it's effectively paying interest on the loan that he gave you. By ribit, the only thing we need to know is whether you assumed any risk. The answer is no. Besides from giving the loan, you assumed no risk. If you assume no risk besides giving the loan, then you're receiving interest. The provider of the animal is assuming no risk, and therefore, when you pay him the vladot, you're giving him interest on that loan. Over here, it's not the issue of assumption of risk. Here, it's the question of the goy has any connection to the animal. As soon as he has a connection to the animal, it's patur min ha-bechora. Since they can be used as collateral, he has a connection to the animal. That connection makes you patur min ha-bechora. It's not an assumption of risk, it's just a quasi-ownership. Now, we explained the Gemara according to Rashi, who says the case of ribit in Baba Metzia revolves around the fact that he's giving him the schar of these animals in return for the loan. The Rabbeinu Tam says that's still not ribit midoraita, that's only ribit, that's only interest midorabanan. And that is because there is a possibility that the lender could lose here. What happens if it produces no offspring? If it produces no offspring, then the lender will actually get nothing. So it's not guaranteed interest. It's only interest midoraita if you're guaranteed to get that amount. Here it's only interest derabanan because, true, you have no downside, but your upside is not guaranteed. So the Rabbeinu Tam actually says that the case in Baba Metzia is actually a case where he not only guarantees to give back the loan, he guarantees a payment per year. He says, either I'll give you the offspring, or I'll pay you a fixed amount. He monetizes not only the principal, but the interest as well. And that's why it's a case here of ribit d'oraita. So he disagrees with Rashi's understanding of that case in Baba Metzia, and says it's really ribit d'oraita because there's a guaranteed principal and interest payment. As Rashi says, it's only ribit d'rabanan, at least according to Rabbeinu Tam's view of Rashi, which is that he's not guaranteed to get the interest. He has no downside, but he's not guaranteed to get the interest, and that is only called ribit derabanan. All right, so now the next part of the Gemara is a little bit more difficult. Hemid vladotehem tachat imotehem. Over here where you replace the children, the mother with the children. Vade vladot turim. Then the next generation is patur. This case where hemid tachtehem is say they originally had their agreement about the first generation. He was given a mother, and then he said, I'll take care of it, and then the vladot we will split. Basically, Goy Gave was the provider of the first generation. Now born to the second generation, 50% belongs to the Jew, 50% belongs to the non-Jew. So technically, those 50% that belong to the Jew, had they terminated their partnership and there was nothing left to do, then they would be chayavin and bechora, because the Goy would have no relevance, no shaykhut to that animal. What the Jew does, it says, listen, I really want to put us back into, I want to stay in business with you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take care of, even if he takes care of the first generation, but I'm also going to take care of the second generation for you. And to make sure that you feel okay about that, that whole second generation, I'm going to collateralize to you to be collateral for my replacing your first generation and your second generation. I mean, that's what Rashi says. He says, I'm going to give you ownership in the Vladot. If anything dies here, titol Vladot. You can take the Vladot and Megiot the Chelki that were mine. Yeah, so he basically says, we have a case where he has yet to repay the loan that was given for the mother, and he says to the guy, I want to keep working like this. I don't want to pay you back yet. And in order not to pay you back, I know you want your money now, I'm willing to give you additional collateral. The additional collateral is that second generation. Even though one of them belongs to me and one belongs to you, the one that belongs to me, I'm now going to add into the collateral to pay you back the original loan. I'm going to give you back. I owe you the original animal. I'm going to assume the responsibility for all of that. And in that responsibility, to make you comfortable, my half of the Vladot, the second generation, my half there will now be in the pool of what you can get, you can take from or you can take back to protect your loan here. And because he puts that into the bucket of collateral, it's as if he puts the goy's ownership and resets it into this animal. And that's why it's an additional generation down in terms of the goy's influence over the animals. Now this, by the way, this is going back on the ratio of the Mishnah. Going back to the original Mishnah case where it's the first generation. So Amar Rav Huna, Vladot Pturim, Vladei Vladotehen Chayavim. So Rav Huna says that when it comes to this din over here, Vladot are Pturim, Vladei Vladot are Chayavim in Bechora. Rav Yehuda Amar, Rav Yehuda says, Vladei Vladot Nami Pturim, it's Vladei Vladot Chayavim. So it's only once you hit the fourth generation you become Chayav. So the first Bechora you can have is in the fifth generation according to Rav Yehuda. According to Rav Huna, the first Bechora you can have is in the fourth generation because the third generation is already Chayav, the fourth generation will have a Bechora in it. Question is, what are they arguing about here? The Nikudat HaMachloket between them is, how far down does the reach of the Goy go? How far down does he consider to be collateral for his loan for the mother or the matriarch of this entire family? He wants his loan back. How far down the generations does he look and say, that's collateral for my loan? So Rav Yehuda says he looks down three generations. Rav Huna says, no, he only looks down two generations. What's in that purview? And that is the Nekudat HaMachloket between them. Tnan, our Mishnah. Hemid Vladot Tachat Imotehen. If they replace their mother, Vladei Vladot Pturim. Then the Vladei Vladot are Pturim. So why are the Vladei Vladot Pturim over here? Why is the third generation Patur? I mean that there will be no Bechora in the fourth generation. Because Taima Dehemid. Our mission tells you why. Because they did this transaction. He extended the transaction. Ha lo Hemid. Had he not extended the transaction, lo, that would not have been the case. And Vladei Vladot would have been Chayavim and Bechora. That means that the fourth generation would have Bechora in it. Tiyufta the Rabbi Yehuda. That's a very strong question against Rabbi Yehuda. It sounds like the only way that you're Patur, the fourth generation is Patur, is if you did this case of Hemid. But if you didn't do this case of Hemid, made, then the fourth generation wouldn't be Patur. So where did he come up with this? Some of the Chavrav Yehuda, who adin, da'afagat lo hemid. That it would have been the case. It would be true, even if he didn't make that transaction, they would still be Pturim. So then why did the Mishnah write hemid? Afilu hemid nami de'urche dobe chamim lemit pas bina. Ve'avi kemi shalo hemid. Vladei vladot Pturim. Vladei vladot chayavin. He says, that comes to teach us that Hamid makes no difference, basically. Even if you are Hamid, the next generation, as collateral, and put it as part of the picture, you haven't changed anything, because normally the goy would still grab that child anyway. It would be within his purview of collateral. It's as if he didn't do anything. Hamid and Lo Hamid will not change the din, because the goy's purview of what he considers to be part of the collateral included that second generation always. So when your man meet that second generation, that's what he was thinking anyway. That's what he considered anyway. And because of that, Vladei Vladot are Pturim. The third generation is Patur, meaning that the fourth generation will have no Bechora in it. Whereas Vladei Vladot, which is the fourth generation, is Chayavin, which means the first level of Bechora you can have is in the fifth generation. So that's according to Rav Yehuda, that's how he explains our Mishnah. It's none. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Afilu ad asara dorot. Even until 10 generations, again, 10 generations means forever. Turin, they're always, anything that's born from this original Tzon and Barzel is always collateral to the loan. So, Bishlam, the Rabbi Yehuda, that makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Nochit Tanakama Lidare. The Tanakama was expressing generations, meaning he spoke about first and second generation of Turin. Third generation is Patur. Fourth generation, that's when you're Chayav. So you're dealing with multiple generations over here. Then along comes Rabbi Shimon and says, Afilu ad asara dorot. You say until the fourth generation? I say even until 10 generations. So he's responding to the statement of the Tanakhama. According to Rabbi Huna, Tanakhama didn't deal with generations. My afilu adesara dorot. What is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel responding to? According to the Tanakhama, the children are Turim, and then their third generation already is Chayavin. So there's no counting of generations. It's just what's born to the Tzon of Barzel are Patur. What's born to those that are born to the Tzon of Barzel, that's Chayav. So there's no counting. It's not like first, second, third generation. It's just whatever's born to the original Patur. What's not born to the original is Chayav. You're not counting generations. So what's the response of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel then? Oh, Adasara Dorot. He didn't count Dorot to say a response of Adasara Dorot. Oh, so that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, depends how he's responding. If the Tanakhama gave three generations, and then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel responded four generations, we would have thought he meant literally four generations and not more than that. If the Tanakhama didn't deal with generations at all, and then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes and says, what are you talking about? Even Vatei Vlado, da-da-da, are Chayavin. Then we would have inferred from that, we were extrapolated from that, it means forever. Because the Tanakhama didn't discuss more than that. The only reason to go more than that means because you think it goes on forever. And therefore, if Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, in that case, had responded, no, not just, even Vladei Vladot are problematic, we would have extrapolated it further. So the question is, if the Tanakhama is listing, he says three generations, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says four, then we'd think four literally and not more. If the Tanakhama just says, you know, Tzon of Barzel are Patur, everything else is Chayav. Then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, what do you mean? Even Vladei Vladot are Chayavim, that would imply that even forever. So that's why he shouldn't have said afilu etzer sarad dorot. The answer is, Sa'am alecha Rav Huna, Rabbi Shimon ben Amliel ahemid koi. He's talking about the next case. He's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, according to Rav Huna, is responding to the seifa of the Mishnah. Did nochit lidarei. That he went there, you do count generations. Even according to Rav Huna, if it's a case of hemid, even the Tanakhama agrees then that the third generation is Patur, fourth generation is Chayav. So now you're already counting generations. And to that, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel responds, afilu etzerat dorot. Tashma, ha-mekabel tzon ha-barzel min ovi kochavim, vladotehem pturim, vladei vladot chayavim, tiyufto de Rabbi Yehuda. That sounds like a pretty strong question against Rabbi Yehuda, because it's pretty clear here, by the third generation you are already chayav. So I'm going to say Rabbi Yehuda, ema, hein, vivladotehem. Just say they and their children. So if you say they and their children, so that means the first two generations are pturim. Then when you say vladei vladot chayavim, you're only talking about the generation after that. So igadam, right? Hein vivladotehen pturim. Some say, or some quote this braita as having it be hein vivladotehen pturim, and then only vladei vladotehen are chayavim. Tiyuvta de Rav Huna, that would be a problem for Rav Huna. Melcha Rav Huna, ema hein vivladot patur. Vladei vladot chayav, that they and their children are pturim, but vladei vladot, but the third generation already is chayavin. So if you read it, again, depending on which way you have the braita, it'll be a question on Rabbi Yehuda or on Rav Huna. If you have the original lashon of the braita, which is vladot are pturim, vladei vladot are chayavin. So in that case, it would be a question of Rav Yehuda, because according to Rav Yehuda, only once you hit the fourth generation that you are chayavin. The first two generations are pturim. So only the fourth generation is chayav. How come over here it seems to indicate by the third generation you're already chayav? He answers that by saying it's hein vivladotehen. When it says that, it's them and their children, meaning that their children's children. So they and their children, hein being the second generation, vladotehen, the third generation, are pturim. And then the fourth generation is the one that is chayav. If we start out with hein uvladotehen, then Rav Huna amends the braita to read hein vivladot. They and the children are pturim, but their offspring would be chayavin, and that would be the third generation ready would be chayav. That's how they'll fit into this braita, or they'll answer up this braita. What we quoted here was the Shita Kumabetzet, who really says that the question Rav Yehud and Rav Huna derives from our Mishnah. And the question is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says vladotehen turin, then vladei vladot chayavin. So Rav Yehud amends the Mishnah to read hein vivladotehen. And the other way around, for Rav Huna, the question is that the Mishnah actually says, hein vivladotehen. And then his answer is, no, amend the Mishnah to read just vladotehen. That's the way the Shita Mekubetzet reads the Gemara. On the other hand, the Rosh actually says that it's a question out of a Braita. It's a question of a Vav. And that's the Rosh says, amekabel tzon barzel, hein vladotehen pturim. So all it says is hein and then vladotehen. Along comes Rabbi Yehuda and says, oh, don't read it as hein vladotehen, but rather hein vivladotehen. The vladotehen is not the definition of the hein, but rather hein vivladotehen. the second generation plus the third generation. And the other way around for Ravuna. Ravuna says the Girsa is Hain Viv Ladutehen. And then Ravuna comes and says, no, amend that to read just Hain Vladutehen, that the Hen equals the Vladutehen. So that's the Girsa de Rosh in terms of what the question here derives from a Braita. Whereas the Shita Kubavetz, it says it derives from our Mishnah. Okay, we'll stop over here.